You're listening to episode 274 of Women Worldwide. When it comes to managing money in a relationship, does gender play a part? Do you take on a certain role? And how much should you be involved in your finances? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for tuning in, for being with us, especially now at a time when businesses are opening up in different ways in different areas of the country. There's still uncertainty, and we're navigating so much. So your time is really important. And also just want to thank you. So many of you are reaching out, sharing how you're doing, how you're feeling, and what you need, what challenges you're facing. And we always, always try to let you know we're here for you. And Women Worldwide brings the guests and the shows to help you and the advice to get you over your challenges and to power up your own voices so you can succeed. Okay, well, let's get to our topic and special guest. The topic today is gender and money. So here's a question for you. Do women feel like they play a certain role when it comes to the finances in their lives or at work? Well, it's an interesting question, and I've got the perfect guest who's going to break this all down for us today. Joining me on the show is Meredith Moore, and Meredith is a financial planner. She's also the founder and CEO of Artisan Financial Strategies. Meredith has been doing a lot of work in her long career around gender, money, and power, and specifically seeing if there are gender role assumptions when it comes to women and money and power. So I could share a lot about Meredith, lots of accolades, but I think it's time that she shares her journey and advice with you. Meredith, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. It's great to meet you. I'm really excited to be here and share a lot of the things that I've learned over my 20 plus year career.
Oh my gosh. Well, we can certainly, I can tell we're going to learn a lot from you. I always start off with that question, Meredith, why? Why did you decide to become a financial planner and also to, you know, launch this company and do the research that you're doing?
So 21 years ago, like I had just graduated from Georgia Tech, and like going into financial advisory was the last thing that my family or anybody thought that I should be doing.
Surprise.
I think the reality was, though, I was half entrepreneur. And back in the late 90s, like the idea of entrepreneurship isn't what it is now. The idea of doing a startup was going out and buying a Subway at that time. Like there
right.
weren't the entrepreneur
yeah,
centers. Right, exactly. And so financial advisory was a track where I could essentially start my own practice and get all my licensing and things like that. And I was sort of arrogant enough to think, and maybe rightfully so at that time, that I was smarter than the average person in the industry, given my educational background and some of the leadership experience I had had in undergrad. And I didn't feel like I was getting offers for what I thought I was worth. And it was a way, it was an industry that I could do that. And essentially, build cash flows over time. And, I felt like I could build a better mousetrap. So
That was
why that industry was chosen.
And also lift up women to help them to understand that their role with money doesn't have to be stereotypical of an earlier day. And I guess that's where I wanted to ask you, when do you think the beliefs around gender and roles and money start actually developing?
I think they start, in fact, they know that they start as we grow up. And so in my career, what this, and you alluded to it, in 2019, I became really curious because I was systematically seeing issues with clients. And the bulk of the clients I work with are female breadwinners. And so there's a very specific psychology that goes around that, because sometimes we're back to old gender role stereotypes. The man handles money. And hey, my mom never handled the money. My dad always did. Back to, hey, it's when we grow up. And so I wanted to kind of marry my experiences with what I was seeing in my office over and over again. And these are women that are C-suite,
right,
senior vice presidents, major entrepreneurs. And while that's not true every time, it's true a lot of the time. And I don't see the same sort of concessions being made, if you will, from the guy with their wife necessarily that I saw with a female breadwinner with her husband. And so I was like, okay, this is really curious. Nobody's really built anything out around this. So I systematically interviewed on Zoom, like every major academic in the world that had done research.
This is really interesting.
Yeah, I've never read a dissertation in my life. Like the minute I finished undergrad in industrial engineering, I was out of there. I don't have a master's. This is all I've ever done. But I started reading dissertations. I interviewed a guy in England. I interviewed a big professor in Australia. I mean, all over the world, and really started dissecting out what they were seeing from an academic. But they were just as curious as what I was seeing anecdotally, since I work with a lot of women that are, again, in a higher socioeconomic level.
So is this why you're kind of looking at it as a psychological trend? I remember reading somewhere, either on your website or in some of your materials, about this psychological trend.
I think it comes back to why do women not take a bigger role in their household? And even if they're female breadwinners, and a lot of it has to do, again, it comes back to how do we view our sort of gender role in our household? Like what stigma or lack thereof does money have?
Right.
And, you know, I have women that make north of $750 a year, and it's easier to outsource things that they feel like, hey, I'm making more money. I need to be spending my time at work. So I'm just going to outsource this like I might daycare or other traditional things to subject matter experts. I'll outsource the money piece to my husband. And what happens is inevitably something bad happens. A divorce crops up.
Right.
Somebody dies. Something bad happens and they haven't been engaged.
And that's so hard.
It is. And it doesn't mean that they can't figure it out, because most of these women are very bright.
Sure.
But it's been under the auspices of delegation and delegation and focusing on what's commonly referred to by the coach Dan Sullivan as unique ability. Like, hey, I'm going to focus on my unique ability. This is easier for me to outsource. Again, something bad happens. Now the time for them to ramp up and understanding takes much, much longer.
So what does it take for a woman to realize that it's probably better, not that we want to wish anything on any woman in terms of something terrible happening in their lives, but just as a way to say, be more involved and here's why. What would you say to that?
Again, kind of to your point, I have to take it from a pain point standpoint as opposed to the happy-go-lucky, you should be doing this.
Right, like, hey, this is fun.
Right, and I know it's not fun. I have a lot of people that dread doing it and dread being involved, but I've...
That's honest.
Yeah, exactly. I always tell people, come as you are. Like, I don't care if you don't have anything. I don't care if you're not involved, but let's come up with a way to where even at a low bar, you have a general understanding.
Yeah, that's really important, Meredith. Just what you said right there to everybody listening, you know, a general understanding. There's a big difference between, you know, if you feel a lot of stress over the actual managing and the doing, you should still have a general understanding.
Yes.
So I guess you're saying that's kind of a step one.
It is. The other thing that's really important to note is when I started really digging into this thing, I studied the history of women and money. And what you have to understand that I didn't know is that, I mean, women couldn't even own property until, you know, the 20th century and farther into the 20th century. And I have several baby boomer women clients. This is the crazy piece. They couldn't open a bank account as a woman without a male spouse to sign as late as the mid-80s. They would have to go get a male friend, and a minor male child could even sign.
That's unbelievable.
So you have this systemic issue historically, and I did this whole animation on it too, like starting from way back when. And you see certain spikes during Industrial Revolution where women were having to work because men were in the war and stuff like that. And of course, the Northeast is the hub for sort of progressiveness and what they allowed. But at the end of the day, I live in the Deep South. I live in Atlanta.
Right.
And so it was just really fascinating and not in a good way to understand the historical context. And back to your original question, Why did these perceptions exist in people's mind? Well, historically, I believe that, you know, we were set up this way from a culture standpoint, and certainly things haven't vastly changed. But there's still a level of needing to outsource, and we, not all, but a lot of people still associate, well, I'm going to let him handle the money. I've created in a lot of my writings this sort of suggested cadence where the couple meets at certain frequencies and on certain things to, you know, create that low bar of engagement.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people say, is this a financial literacy thing? And I'm like, yes, but I believe that the engagement is almost more important than the literacy.
That's really interesting. So Meredith, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. I'd like to shift focus just for a little bit to talk about a project that I've been working on, which I think you're going to be able to add some context around part of it. So my passion project is called Feel, and it's all about how you have to feel first in your communication. Feel stands for face fears, engage with empathy, use ethics and good judgment, and unleash the love. And it comes out of a 52 plus week study on millennial communication and their interactions. So I would love to hear your take on just focusing on the F in feel, because fear is based on stepping out of your comfort zone or doing something new. How much does fear play into a woman not quite assuming a different role when it comes to her finances?
So I think it's a common knowledge that women, if you look at trajectory and hiring and board service and C-suite, it's been proven that women tend not to advance as quickly because they don't ask. It comes from a fear and a lack of confidence is typically what I see. And I believe the same thing is true as it pertains to money. Why upset the apple cart? We've done it this way. He's handled the money. I chime in on these set things. And to your point, I think it's fear of change, fear of status quo, fear of changing what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's like anything. It's the first step is the best step. And the way to jump out of the fear piece, and in some ways with the pandemic, we're living in sort of the same psychology right now, even though it might not be money. But how do we take one step? Just start with a micro action. What is one small step that you can take right now to begin to change that dynamic, increase your engagement, increase your knowledge around the finances?
Yeah. And that one step is going to change how you feel, right? Getting in tune with the fear, the feel part, and then it will show in your communication and your interactions. Thank you so much for answering my question. And now, for anybody who wants to take a test to see how much they feel before they communicate, you can go to feelfirsttest.com. Take the test, get evaluated, scored in each part of the feel model. The test will recommend exercises so you can increase how much you feel. Okay, Meredith, let's jump back into our discussion. I have a quick question about different generations. So, you know, you had mentioned boomer clients not being able to set up a bank account. You know, we have millennials out there now, huge purchasing power, taking a stance, very vocal. We've got Gen Z coming out of college into the workplace. I would think there would be a definite shift in the thinking of the gender roles about money. Are you seeing
this?
Pretty much
so. Yeah, I am. I'm definitely seeing that. I'm seeing a lot more engagement with sort of DIY techniques with money.
Yeah.
Less of, and some of this may be a generation. Some of this just may be a years of experience thing. And the same thing may have been true, you know, 40 years ago, but to where there's more of a reliance on tools and less on subject matter experts.
So is that what you mean by DIY techniques, mm-hmm. relying on the tools?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and sometimes I have to, it's frustrating in my practice because I could take an Xer, which I'm a Gen Xer, and I can take a baby boomer that has done very well over time. And with that experience, they understand the value of a subject matter expert more than their kids, who I might also work with as, you know, a millennial. And I'm a 15-year-old. So, I mean, I know how this works a little bit. And he's more of a Gen Zer, but they want more control is what I tend to see.
Yeah.
And think that almost always they can create better solutions on their own by research. And what I like to tell them is the Google machine has a lot of information out there. And distilling, like, right. And there is a level of DIY in my space that's really good.
Sure.
And then at some point, now you graduate to now you put key subject matter experts around you so you can take that level.
You could excel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know the machine can take you to a certain place. And I know that younger generations can certainly access information. But it's really great when you have a subject matter expert who can lend that business acumen and kind of add to what you found. So there is a huge synergy in that. I also wanted to just ask you if throughout your career, you know, as a financial planner and what you're doing at your company, have you had any big, I guess, moments, learning moments where you either said, aha, or uh-oh, that maybe you could share as a bit of advice?
Yeah, so I'd say probably one of the biggest ones that I had, and I was probably 24, 25 when this happened, was I tried to scale up too quickly and rely on other advisors to do joint work that I wasn't around. We were in different states. I created relationships with certain associations. I started leaning on them to drive revenue that we were sharing. And I came to find out that instead of niching and really focusing on what I was doing, I tried to grow too quickly and didn't have enough sort of control and guardrails on the growth. And I learned that lesson very early on. And I would say the second big aha, and I talk to a lot of mastermind groups about this, and I think most of us have known this intellectually for a long time, but niching is so critical in any business. And it takes a lot of courage to do it. And when I began to niche, focusing on women breadwinners, it was scary. I'm like, oh my God, are men going to not want to do business with me? Like, what are all these other repercussions coming from a scarcity mindset? And I knew that by putting energetically, without sounding woo, just putting my energies to attracting these people, they would come to me and other people would still come to me. But that has allowed me to now grow my business the way that I want it. And I can't recommend niching like more strongly for people, regardless of what they do. But it takes a lot of bravery and courage to do that.
Right, because you feel like you're knocking out other things. But what I'm hearing you say is that when you find that sort of sweet spot, and it's a purpose that drives you to find your niche, you're actually attracting more because you have so much more energy around what you care about and what you're doing. So I think that's really, really, thank you for sharing two great moments that have guided you. And, you know, I can't even believe that we're sort of up to the part of the show where I ask you just to give a little more advice to the women out there, the men too, because we have men who watch and tune into the show, just about, you know, how shifting views on gender, generations, roles, and how they can play a part to make it easier on everybody, especially on younger generations.
So it comes back to, I believe, the cadence of how frequently to get together on money, knowing that most people don't want to do it. And what I lay out is sort of a weekly, like, what do we do weekly? What do we do monthly? And what do we do quarterly? Even though not everybody needs to pay the bills together, but weekly getting together for 30 minutes, even if it's over a bottle of wine, so be it. Awareness on what's going out and what's going in is really critical. Monthly, it's good to see what you're spending in total, but going at it with no judgments. And by the way, this is good for both men and women. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's so much negative anchors that people have to money and shame around it.
Right.
And when they go to it with judgments against the other person, like, hey, she's spending money on shoes. Well, he's spending money on toys.
Right.
You have to go to these things with no judgments against each other. And by the way, it's been proven, learned this from my academics, that when there's discretionary money, women tend to spend it on the household and their kids, where men tend to spend it more on toys.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yep. And then quarterly, I suggest like looking at statements and creating a sort of makeshift balance sheet that you can update. And by creating these mini projects and just saying, hey, like Sunday at 3 p.m., this is when we do this. It's going to last 45 minutes. If we don't finish it, so be it. We do it the next Sunday. But creating habits. And like we said earlier, start small, but create a cadence in which you address all things money together, but come in, no shame, but just to learn with each other kind of where you are. And that increases that engagement. And in turn, that creates greater financial literacy.
Yeah, it also sounds a lot more, it's less threatening and it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. The way that you're laying this out, the cadence, the engagement around it, the, hey, bring the bottle of wine. And you also remove some of the pressure when you said, if we don't finish, that's okay. There's always next Sunday and every Sunday after that. That is really good advice, Meredith. Thank you so much. Last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your company, and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is Artisan, ArtisanFS, like financial strategies, online.com. And my white paper that I wrote, that was my labor of love in 2019 with all my interviews. You can pick that up right there on the homepage, download that and see all the research I did and stuff like that.
Terrific. So, and do you want people to connect with you on LinkedIn? Is that a
absolutely
place you're
at? Yep. I would love people to connect. And it's, again, Meredith C. Moore.
Awesome. That's easy. Meredith, thank you so much for sharing your journey, some really good practical tips for gender, women, money, getting involved, having an understanding. Really appreciate your time and your insights today. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you to all of you for tuning in today and for always being here with us and helping to grow the network. If you want to share, if you have something that's going on in your world, you know how to find me. A lot are emailing me, Deirdre@pureperformancecom2ms.com. You're also finding me on Twitter. Thank you for keeping the conversation going. Okay, friends, be well, stay safe, energized, focused, and feeling empowered. Thank you.